Joe, what do you got for us tonight?
Well, we're going to be covering a case that has really exploded in popularity amongst the true crime community lately. The unsolved disappearance of a Canadian high school student named Michaela Bolly. One day in April of 2016, she left school early and over the next several hours was spotted on several CCTV cameras moving around town and also communicating with someone on her phone, but no one knows who. After this, it's as if she just fell off the face of the earth and she has never been seen since.
Quiet your mind. Ever since the Earth has circled the sun, there have been fantastic tales of wonder and mystery that the fate of Hart dared not discuss. But three brave, uninformed souls have the brass to tackle every extraordinary happenstance from the modern age to the dawn of Mandis.
Welcome to Dawn of Mantis, true crime, mysteries, and more. Ivan, Joe, and Sam. Hey, we're going to start off this episode by thanking some people we should be thanking a lot. And actually, we're thinking about thanking them more often, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's a good way to go into it.
Yes, we should.
So our regulars, we talked about this before we started recording, our regulars that listen every week, that actually a lot of them will go back and listen to multiple episodes over and over again. I'm not sure why, but they do. Joe, you got the list. So let's roll some names out. Let's give them some shout outs.
Yeah, no, I'll miss a few people, but we're going to do this probably, every once in a while. So
yeah,
we'll get to you. But yeah, I just went through some names of some people who have been with us for a while. And also, it's not like we have a huge, huge group of listeners. So I'm going to use your first name and last initial. So if it's James J., it's probably you. You know, if you're like James Johnson, there's probably not 20 James J's that listen to us, right?
Yeah, just assume that it is.
I know a James Johnson.
Oh, does he listen?
Probably not.
So, listen, shout out, special thanks to Chris T, Ken C, and actually Ken has been on board with us from almost day one.
Yes.
He is our bidet mate voice.
Yes, he is.
Yes, he is.
Deetra C, Anya and Nina T, Crystal B, who has also been with us since almost day one. Carl H, who also has.
Yes.
Chad C, Cliff M, Lonnie C, Robin R, who we all know, Sally K, and Kevin C. That's just a few.
Back to Lonnie C, he's done our artwork, our newest artwork that you can see on our thumbnail, which is amazing. You should click on that and look at it bigger because that's hand-drawn, digitally, but still hand-drawn.
And we should use, so it's Lonnie Combs.
Yes.
And we're only using
Combs
his
Studio.
Last name. Yes, he markets himself as, Combs Studio, so we will use his last name.
Yeah, so we're talking about, before we started recording, we should name these people, kind of like some other people have, a name for their group of fans, mm-hmm. and we decided on The Pod.
The Pod.
The Pod.
You are The Pod.
The Mantis Pod.
Yeah.
So,
love it.
We're coming up with a little jingle for you guys. So, here's the thing. You guys reach out to us on the hotline 4174-MANTIS. Sometimes you drop things on social media. We're going to start. We feel like we need to nurture our first listeners, our first loyal listeners. So we're going to talk about you guys more because I think from what I've heard from a lot of you guys tell 5 or 6 people about us. You're like, hey, I listen to these guys. I like this a lot. And I think we're seeing that in our analytics that our regulars, our pod, if you will.
Yes.
I think they're the reason why our numbers are bumping up.
Absolutely.
I really do, because they really like what we're doing and we really love that you guys listen. So thank you. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you want to do a Twitch?
Yes. Yeah. This week in true crime history.
All right. Let's hit it.
Ladies and gentlemen and true crime aficionados, it's time for This Week in True Crime History. It's where we look back at any malice and mayhem that happened this week in history.
February 4th, 1974, Patty Hearst, that's when she was kidnapped. And so, yeah, so basically, long story short, and knock at the door, her and her boyfriend are there, I think, if I'm not mistaken, and she was kidnapped, he was roughed up, and William Randolph Hearst, so of that era. So we might even do a case about that one of these
days. We should, really.
I know that's super popular, but, it hasn't stopped us before. But, hey, I want to talk about another thing. It's not really true crime, but we've talked about it on the podcast. The Day the Music Died. February 3rd, 1959. Yeah. Here's why I wanted to bring that up. I feel like, and you guys could talk about this more, I feel like that was kind of a turning point for our podcast. I don't know why, but I know it's true. Does that make sense at all?
Yes, I feel you. Yeah.
Eight-part series, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I just feel like there's before that series and after, if that makes any sense at all.
That series got us so many of our listeners.
So many of our pods.
Yes, so many of the pod came from that. It was a huge deal. And I still feel like, even though that's been a few years ago now, I guess.
Yes.
That's like our magnum opus. Like the Buddy Holly series, if anyone was like, hey, what's your proudest thing you've done? I'd be like, man, that series.
I'd say that series and Kim McElroy, for sure.
Yeah.
The Gene McFadden. I'd say, we still bring that up like almost everywhere. Isn't it possible? Yeah. So, hey, I appreciate you guys for putting up with me. And I was going to say, Sam edits. He has to listen to all this again. And then he listens to it again for some reason after that even. That's amazing. Thank you so much for that. Joe, a lot of times at the end of an episode, I'll say, hey, that was a good one. And that's all I ever say about all this time and effort you put into researching these cases.
That's
most of it. So just know that I mean that more than than what it sounds like. I mean, oh, thanks for the hamburger. Good job on this. You know, I don't want you to think that I'm making light of it. It's you're the meat and potatoes of this thing. You guys keep this thing going. So thank you guys so much for putting up with my shenanigans and grinding everything to a stop every once in a while with something that I think's goofy.
I put up with nothing. I love both you guys. I love what we do. And you know what's funny? The research that I do for the podcast, I've really done most of my life just out of curiosity. I would hear about a case. The only difference now is I write it down as I'm going through it. So, but yeah, man, that's the whole point we're doing this. We love talking about this stuff. And this is also just an excuse for the three of us to have a guy's night once a week and hang out.
It really is. And we just happen to record it.
Yeah.
So, okay. Well, all right. So, without further ado,
let's talk about the unsolved disappearance of Michaela Bolle.
Okay.
So she was actually born Michaela Margaret Kim Niebergall. I hope I said that right. In the city of Regina in the Canadian province of Saskatchewan on July 2nd, 1999. I can't say it without a Canadian accent.
That's how you're supposed to say it by law.
Not only was Michaela's father not in the picture, she told friends that she didn't even know who he was. She was raised by her mother, Paula Marie Bolle, and at the time of her disappearance, Michaela was living with her mom, grandmother, and two younger siblings in Yorkton, Saskatchewan. She seems to have had a fairly average upbringing, from what I could find. By the spring of 2016, she was in 11th grade at Sacred Heart High School. Despite being described as shy and reserved, she was in drama club at school and apparently did well there. She did well academically also and had a fondness for reading, as well as playing the violin, an instrument for which she had been taking lessons in the months leading up to her disappearance.
Well, so I thought about trying to play violin one time, and I read that it's one of the hardest instruments just to pick up.
Really?
Yeah. So I did not do that. It's like, I need something I can kind of relate to guitar somehow, but I guess it's just totally different.
There's no frets on a violin, right?
No, I don't believe so.
Yeah, I don't. And I've seen guys play fretless guitars. I just need that reference.
Yeah,
you know,
for sure.
How do you do that?
And just the whole thing of pulling the, you know, the bow.
Yeah.
And I don't even know how to rosin it up. I've heard you're supposed to do that in a song, but on a Saturday night. But
Alabama.
Anyway.
Yeah, that makes me appreciate.
Is it rosin? Did I say that right?
Yeah,
rosin up the bow.
Yeah, up the rosin bow. Up the bow.
Okay.
Say your love and that's all. Day.
Horsehair, I've heard.
Is it horsehair?
Yeah.
Well, look, if you want to play in Texas, you've got to have a fiddle in the band.
Oh, okay. I wasn't thinking of that one. I was thinking of the Louisiana Saturday Night.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Never mind.
Still great. Two great tracks.
But this all makes me appreciate Roy Clark even more.
Okay. Yeah.
Because that guy, if it had strings on it, he could play the shit out of it. So by all accounts, I know people are like, we already got on to Roy Clark from Michaela Bolle. Good God. I'm finding another podcast.
I don't know if they sound like that, then they're probably fine talking about Roy Clark.
That's true. That's true. Yeah. All right. I did use the wrong accent there. About time they brought in Roy Clark.
Yeah. That's what we got. Yeah.
I was about to turn it off.
Yeah, exactly.
By all accounts, Michaela was a good kid. She didn't smoke, didn't drink, didn't do drugs. She didn't even vape like all the kids do lately. Yeah.
Crazy.
Not long before she vanished, she had shown some friends some pills that she claimed were oxycodone, but they turned out to be Accutane, an acne medication that she'd been prescribed.
Okay.
So, yeah, she had had some bullying problems over, you know, she just was one of those unfortunate souls that as she went through puberty, her face, you know, had some pretty severe acne on it.
Yeah, and someone would pick on her if it was something she couldn't, you know, she couldn't help.
Like school's natural. We've said it before, school's brutal.
Yeah.
Brutal.
Yeah.
So, yeah, anything. And you remember, kids used to get made fun of for wearing glasses. Doesn't that seem just utterly ridiculous now?
Four eyes.
Yeah, I wear corrective lenses.
Yeah.
It's so ignorant now to think about it.
Still two eyes. Good math, though, but not great counting. One, two.
That's so weird, man.
Yeah, just because you have glasses, does that add two more eyes?
Yeah, no. Exactly. Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Hey, it's forearms. A way for them to,
yeah.
You're wearing a sweater, forearms, covering your arms.
That's a great analogy.
Yeah.
Four eyes.
If you had a sweater and a jacket on, you know, I mean, you could just keep going.
No, you could. You could.
Hey, six arms. Dumbass, six arms. Where are you going, six arms?
You have shoes on. Hey, four legs. Hey, 4 feet. Nice pants, four legs. Nice hat, two head.
That's the mentality of it. Hey, four. And it's over such a stupid thing. It's corrective lenses you wear on your face. Why would they make fun of that? Who gives a shit? I don't know. Ivan's dying over there.
I love absurd. I love pointing out absurd things like that.
Yeah.
Just kind of getting back at the bully.
Yep. It really is. It really is.
So, yeah, that was a little weird that she'd shown pills. You're like, hey, man, these are oxys. Look what I got. And they turned out to be Accutane. I don't know why really Michaela did that.
Yeah, I mean, I could see that. Just, I mean, it could have just been a joke,
or just trying to be cool.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Some way of being liked.
Yeah, you know? That's right.
Even though it's weird.
Yeah,
you just do weird things. I remember one time when I was 16, I had to lay under my El Camino for the better part of a day working on the transmission, and it was in my yard, and my back got kind of scratched up from the grass, and I had my shirt off when my cousin came over because I was washing. And I was all done anyway. He was like, God dang, what happened to your back? And I lied. And I was like, my girlfriend the other night, man. He was like, good Lord. I was like, yeah.
What, you have a bunch of gravel in her hand?
Oh.
Doesn't say much for her, does it? Man, I'd get rid of her if I were you.
Yeah, boy. Yeah, I just totally lied.
Yeah.
I did. Yeah, he bought it.
That's awesome.
To this day, he's probably just like, wow. I don't know. That's stupid. But that's just to say when it's you're funny. 16, you just say and do stupid.
Yeah, no, things. You lie without even wondering why you lie.
So yeah, apart from this weird thing with the pills, Michaela had also inflicted some self-harm cuts on one of her thighs, from what I found. Something that, thanks to pressures, depression, and anxiety caused by unrealistic goals set by social media, is much too common for teenage girls these days.
Yes. Yes.
And that is actually, I can't remember the statistics, but it's concerning.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. It totally is.
Yeah.
That's why I call it fake book.
Yep. And what was the Instagram one?
Insta-spam.
Insta-spam. Yeah. Speaking of social media, all right, that's going to play a major role in Michaela's disappearance. Okay. Less than 2 months prior, she posted a picture of her Snapchat profile on some of her other platforms and wrote, and I quote, "Looking for Snapchat friends because I have none in real life. Add me. Please don't be a greasy f**k and send me gross ass nudes. Just looking for a friend." So Michaela did have friends, which is weird. Like, she had at least two or three pretty close friends in a little friend group. And had also dated a few guys in the past. So I'm kind of at a loss as to why she took to social media and a bid for friendship.
My guess would be that sometimes teenagers, the close friends, can become the worst enemies like that.
Especially for girls. I hate to say that. Don't get mad at me.
Yeah. And also, your friend has ammo on you. You know, they know everything.
Oh, yeah.
So that can get really ugly really fast. That would just be, without knowing anything else about it, that would be a guess.
Yeah. Very true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Alienated.
And even like a friend group of three, two can kind of get closer and make one feel alienated easily.
That's true.
Maybe not even on purpose.
Yeah.
That happens too. So around the same time as this social media post, Michaela received a bouquet of roses in a plain cardboard box at her school. They had been sent via an online order, and if Michaela knew who had sent them, she never told anyone. So we don't know.
Ooh, yeah.
So on Monday, April 11th, 2016, the day before she disappeared, Michaela's strange behavior began. At school that day, she started to tell friends that she was getting ready to leave town and go on vacation, most likely to Regina, which was about 2 hours away.
Okay.
She went on about her plans, but for whatever reason, her friends didn't take her seriously. She also told her friends that she had over $5,000 in her bank account and that she may be gone for a while to Regina. A teacher would later say that Michaela acted upset about something in class that day, but did not divulge what. After school, Michaela texted a friend and asked if she could get a ride to the TD Bank, and that stands for the Toronto Dominion Bank,
Okay. The
following day. Saying it was very important that she get there. Despite trying to secure this ride, records would later show that Michaela called her bank's customer service line several times that evening and ended up wiring $25 into her account. So I guess she got impatient or something.
Sure, yeah.
The following morning began like any other. The family got up, Michaela got ready for school, and her mother got ready for work. Afterwards, the grandmother drove Michaela to school, as she always did, and dropped her off a little after 8 a.m. Now, this is confirmed both by CCTV cameras and the school Wi-Fi, which connected to Michaela's phone at 8:08 a.m.
Okay.
So this, as a companion to this podcast episode, y'all out there, the pod, I want you to jump on YouTube. And what was the name of the video, Sam?
Follow Michaela Bolly's movements on this timeline of the day she disappeared from Yorkton.
Yeah, the longest title of a video in YouTube history. But if you start typing that.
Yeah, the video is shorter than the title.
Another thing you could do, I'll do this right now.
This is good, Sam.
It took me a minute to comprehend what he said. I'm going to put that on our Donna Mantis YouTube. I'll put that in a playlist so you guys can find that. So find us on Donna Mantis on YouTube and then look for that video.
Okay. Yeah, there are a lot of CCTV cameras around this town. And there's quite a bit of footage of her movements that day. None of which made any sense, by the way. So, okay, she gets to school at 8:08. The school security cameras then showed Michaela placing her binder in her locker and leaving school at 8:26. So she was just there a few minutes. That's it. It must also be noted that although Michaela almost always only carried a purse and that binder to school, on this day, she is lugging a pretty full-looking backpack. She got a big old backpack on her back, and you know how they look when they're pretty much at capacity. This thing is... It was packed full of whatever.
Okay.
After leaving the school, Michaela can be seen by CCTV footage walking along Gladstone Avenue past the Super C gas station at 8:30. From the school, she walked a little over a mile to the bank where she arrived at 8:51. So for the first part of this day, we have very specific information about exactly where she went and what she did.
Yeah.
By the way, to help set the scene here, Yorkton is not a very big town. It's got a population of about 16,000, or it did at that time.
Okay.
And the whole town is less than 3 miles across.
Oh, okay.
Not a big town.
Yeah.
So just a hair smaller than the town we're sitting in right now. At the bank, she spoke with a teller and withdrew $55 before leaving. By the way, Michaela did not have anywhere near $5,000 in her account. I think it was less than 100. So after getting her money, she stepped outside and made a phone call. Now, it's important to note that almost none of the activity from her phone that day showed up in her phone records, which means she was using some type of app to communicate, most likely Snapchat and or Kik, K-I-K. Kik is especially known as an app used by kidnappers and traffickers to groom young girls.
Oh, wow.
Have you ever heard of Kik?
I've never even heard of it. I was wondering if it was like just an app they have in Canada or something. I think
I've heard of it before.
You have,
but man, that just sounds so scary. Like, because I mean, the way you described it, it's an app used for kidnappers, and it's like
that's how they run their ad. That's how they advertise.
Hey, let's get off Kick, people. Let's leave all the kidnappers on there. Let them kidnap each other.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Well, also later we're going to hear that she was carrying a burner phone. Oh, she had two phones on her that day. She was very, she was very intentionally trying to cover her tracks and you know, communicate with whoever she was communicating with under the radar.
That just makes me think, I mean, that's what people like this would do. They would tell you to sever all your ties with your, you know, the people you know and the people that you love. So that way it's not discovered. So it just makes me think early on in this, she's just following directions of somebody else.
That's what I think.
And if someone was older, like she'd want to hide it too, especially if they were, however, you know, 30.
Yeah.
You know, man.
Yep. I agree. Yeah. And we'll get way more into that, but that's, you already hit the nail on the head. Michaela left the bank at 8:55 and walked north across Broadway Street to Terry's Pawn and Bargain, where she tried to pawn two silver rings. However, their value was not enough for the owner to even mess with it, and Michaela left the shop empty-handed at 9:11 a.m. So she's desperately, maybe not desperately, but she's just pulled $55 out of her bank. That may have been all she had in there, I don't know. And now she's trying to pawn a couple of rings. This girl's trying to get some money, right?
Yeah.
For something. From there, she made the 10-minute walk along 3rd Avenue and Broadway Streets to the local Tim Hortons restaurant, where CCTV footage shows her arriving around 9:22. Here is where we really begin to see that whatever Michaela was up to, it was clear that she did not have a solid plan. Or if she did, things were not going according to plan.
Okay.
Either that or she was supposed to meet someone and they kept stalling on her. It's some very bizarre. Do you have it pulled up over there, Sam, of her and the Tim Hortons?
Yeah.
I say this because her movements seem random and fidgety. She is seen sitting in a booth, talking on her phone, and checking the door frequently. She also left the restaurant several times, only to walk right back in a few minutes later. Again, some of the texts she sent that day are on her phone record, but none of the calls. So they were all made either through some sort of app or like the burner phone. And she's on the phone a lot during this time, like talking on the phone. Yeah.
Yeah, she's getting instructions.
That's what I think. During her time at Tim Hortons, Michaela texted a friend saying, quote, "I need help," only to send back like just a couple minutes later, "Never mind, I figured it out."
Man.
She also approached a random woman in the restaurant and asked her if she would help her get a hotel room for the night. Probably because Michaela was too young to do it herself.
Yeah.
So she just approaches this stranger to help. The woman declined, so Michaela returned to her own booth and made more phone calls. She was on the phone almost the entire time she was in the restaurant. Finally, after nearly an hour and a half, Michaela left Tim Hortons at about 10:45 a.m. Even then, it seemed odd because there are two entrances to the place, and she first walks out the front entrance, only to immediately turn around, walk back in, and then exit the restaurant through another entrance or an exit. So she walks out, pushes the door open, and then even before the door has time to like slowly close, she turns around, walks back through it, back through the restaurant, and leaves out another door. It just really, none of it makes sense.
Yeah.
So although Michaela does not appear on any CCTV footage for over an hour after this, we do know that she walked to the STC bus station and asked when the next bus was leaving for Regina, which wasn't until 5 p.m. After this, Michaela walked back to Sacred Heart High School, arriving there at noon. Now, by the way, this stuff is not all just right on top of each other. The walk from Tim Hortons to the school was around 40 minutes.
Okay.
36 minutes or so to walk. That's what Google Maps told me. But Michaela took way over an hour to make the trip. Other than the quick stop at the bus depot, it is not known where else she went during that time. You know, so there's like probably 15, 20 minutes that aren't accounted for.
And wonder if she met up with someone at that time just for a few minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause she's off the radar during that time, you know, no CCTV. She texted a friend along the way to say, "See you at lunch." However, Michaela was only at school less than 5 minutes. And we have the footage of that as well.
Yeah, it's the cafeteria,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, she just walked into the cafeteria, spoke to a couple of friends. I'm talking like 3 minutes and walked right back out. And then she's walking back down the highway again. It was such a, like, it's a 40-minute walk back to school just to walk in and say a couple of words to your friends and walk out.
Yeah.
I don't know about your school, Ivan, but I know at Siloam High School, it's a lot harder to get in and out of school than just that.
Well, it's a new protocol that should be an old protocol.
Right.
Yeah. This was 8 years ago almost. So,
yeah. Maybe. But I mean, still, I mean, let's think about this. Like, all the doors should be locked.
Yeah.
It's oh,
like,
yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Should have been like that forever. But I mean, I get why it wasn't. It's the good old boy system that can't happen here, stuff like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, yeah, for her to just be able to walk in the cafeteria and walk out like that.
This looks like a big enough school where all the doors should not be unlocked.
Yeah, no, yeah, no.
That's a huge cafeteria. Yeah.
And I mean, by that point, we already have had, sadly, a ton of, so many, uncountable, sadly. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, I get it. Let's be cool and let's give these kids some freedom. And okay, fine, but there's a way to still make it safe. I mean, you know, just a central point where they have to go in and out and you have somebody that knows the people that lets them in and out. And that's easy. I mean, that makes sense. But to be able to come in a random door in the cafeteria, that's atrocious.
And look, this isn't, I don't think this is political. With just a fraction of the hundreds of millions of dollars we've been throwing out to other countries, we could have an armed guard at every entrance of every school in this entire country and pay them for like the next 50 years.
Well, so we're doing better. Some of us are doing better.
Good.
Than before.
Good.
But yeah, you're totally right. There's a lot of places that money could come from, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
So these friends that Michaela spoke to for just a minute, they would later say that she basically just repeated her story. Hey, I'm still going to Regina to go on this vacation. And they were the ones that said that they noticed she had two phones. I think she was carrying one in her hand and they noticed one sticking out of her back pocket or something.
Mm-hmm.
So this is where the burner phone thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this brings up the possibility that, like I said earlier, I'm just repeating myself, that instead of using an app, Michaela was also using the burner phone for those calls. Michaela then made the 20-minute walk from the school back to the bus depot where she ordered lunch at the Trail Stop Cafe. Now, this is just a little eatery inside the bus depot.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe there is any CCTV footage from there, but according to the reports from fellow customers, Michaela left sometime between 1 and 1:45. There was brief interest in a man, some claimed, left with Michaela that day. He had a distinctive cross tattoo on his arm, but it was later verified that he was simply holding the door open for her as she left. Then he walked off in a totally different direction. So I guess at first, I mean, maybe they happened to walk towards the door at the same time. He's a gentleman, opens it for her. But from there, I think there were other witnesses that said, well, yeah, but she walked right. He walked left. And I don't know. They marked him off after.
Okay. I will say, looking at this, Sam's played it several times and you could talk to this because I know you've watched this several times, Joe. Like just the way she's walking around is odd to me.
Yes. Yeah.
Like the feel of that, like on a mission, not like a kid would walk around.
No. Yeah. It very much looks like she's trying to figure out what to do.
Yes.
The whole day. I kind of sense a situation where it's an older guy and he's really gun shy. So he's trying to meet up with her, but at the same time, he's super paranoid.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe he was like, okay, you know what? Okay, yeah. Go to Tim Hortons. I'll meet you there.
Yeah.
And then she gets there and he's getting cold feet or something.
Yeah.
Oh, and he's like, no, okay, no. Maybe that's too public. Go back to the bus depot. Or, you know what? How about you just get a ticket and come to Regina? I'll meet you there. Or,
yeah.
You know, I just feel like the whole day was just that, like cat and mouse back and forth.
But do you get a feel that he was at any of these places? I mean,
I don't.
Don't.
I get the feeling this guy was in a totally different location and it was all just communication, you know, via phone.
But you think he's just after her? Or do you think he's trying to get her to get some money and then that way money and her, you know?
That I don't know.
Yeah.
What's your feeling on it?
I don't know. I mean, I'm just kind of trying to wrap my brain around it. It just kind of seems like he's, I mean, it seems too easy. Like, yeah, get on a bus and come here. That seems like she would have been able to do that somehow.
Yeah.
But it seems like she's needing something else. And I don't know if he, you know, is trying to get her to get money somehow or whatever.
True.
Or whatever it is. I've been watching those scammer videos so much. I mean, it could be something like that. But normally they go after the elderly, you know, to trick them out of their money.
Yeah. So the other aspect, like you said, was he after just her? She was a very pretty girl.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So I get more of the feeling that this was like a sexually motivated thing.
But I mean, why is it just so scattered? I mean, what else is she trying to accomplish?
Right. Yeah.
Because I feel like, and what's with the hotel thing? I mean, she decided to run away. So she doesn't want to go home. So she wants to stay over and then go the next day. I don't really understand any of that.
I don't either, because she asked about the hotel, but she's also trying to get a bus ticket. That's why I think she's just like modifying her plan throughout the day as she went.
You think she probably was trying to get the guy to come to her town, and the guy knew that was a bad idea because, you know, smart enough to know there's cameras everywhere. There's, you know, he knows his intentions. So she's going to, I mean, possibly he knows his intentions. So, you know, she's going to go missing and they're going to see the footage and find him, you know, so he's not wanting to come anywhere close enough. Maybe that's the debate back and forth. Like, why don't you just come meet me? It's like, well, I can't, you know?
You know what? It reminds me of one of my favorite shows. I haven't watched it in forever, but To Catch a Predator.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, totally.
I've watched it on that show play out where, you know, these people that are posing as the young girls when they're talking with the perverts.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it would take a week or two.
That's true.
For that guy to get the courage. You know, it's like, well, no, I could get in big trouble. And, you know, the girl, teehee, my parents are gone, you'll be fine. And then if finally after sometimes days or a couple of weeks, the guy gets the courage, but then he'll like drive by the house, like three or four, you know, it's like a cat that's trying to come in and just eat this mouse, but it knows maybe that there's a big dog around.
Yeah. Or a trap or whatever.
Or a trap. Yeah. So it's just like testing the waters.
Yeah.
A little, that's what it reminds me of.
Well, I think that, you know, I kind of disagree. I think he might've been somewhere around. I mean, for her to go to that cafe and act like she did, I think he could have walked in at any moment, but I don't think he ever made it. I mean, I think he was probably somewhere around. Like, even if he was in his car, not ever to get out of his car.
You think she knew that he
was... Yeah, I think she was trying to make... I mean, it's all speculation, obviously. But she's trying to get him to come in there. And he said, why don't you just come in? You're just right here.
Yeah.
You know? And he won't.
That would make sense. Like you're saying, maybe he even drove up and drove by.
Yeah, and then in the parking lot. Like you said, chickened out, just like the Predator guys.
Yeah. Because they're always scared it's a setup, or they're always scared they're going to get caught or whatever. I really feel like it was that type of situation.
Yeah.
Well, here's one thing for sure that we know. She was on the phone a lot of that day with somebody.
Yeah.
No one has came forward, you know, to say that it was them, and there's no records of who she spoke to. Whoever she was on the phone with knows damn good and well where she is.
Exactly.
100% sure. But this was the last, when she left the Trail Stop Cafe, or essentially the bus depot at 1 to 145, that's the last verified sighting of her, of Michaela Ball.
Okay.
When her grandma came to pick her up from school, over 2 hours later, she was not there. Then Michaela failed to show up at her violin rehearsal, which was at 4. Her mother and grandmother searched around Yorkton for Michaela for the next few hours, and after having no luck, they reported her missing later that evening. Now, there has been no further activity on Michaela's phone or bank accounts, but we do know that the following day, at about 7 a.m., Michaela's phone was turned off.
Mm.
So that's weird.
Yeah.
That, you know, who turned it off? Did she turn it off? Did
the battery die?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Does it indicate the difference between the battery dying or the phone being physically turned off?
I would not think so. I think that would be pretty much identical.
Okay.
Because when you go to power it off, it shuts down same all difference. The circuits. So I don't think there's a way to, somebody out there that's cell savvy, 4174 Mantis, or hit us up on Instagram.
As much as she was on that damn thing throughout the whole day, sure. I bet you just died.
That's what I was thinking too. She spent a lot of time on it at the restaurant. Plus, while she was walking to and from school and the restaurants and everywhere else, she was probably on it the whole time.
Yeah.
And I do know the Wi-Fi circuits, like that ends up taking a little bit more battery than if you were just doing something random. So, I mean, yeah, very possible. that it made it run down faster.
I would put my money on the battery died then.
Yeah.
After that little
exchange. Or, I mean, after whatever happened, I mean, it's very chilling to think that some person picked it up and powered it off. Yeah.
After they did whatever they did.
Yeah.
God, I could see that too. Well, bus depot records do not show that Michaela ever bought a ticket that day, and she did not have a passport. So it seems unlikely that she left Canada.
Mm-hmm.
There was a brief glimmer of hope in the case when several of Michaela's friends mentioned she had claimed a person she'd met online named Christopher was coming to Saskatchewan, specifically Saskatoon, it's a mouthful, to visit. Police were able to track this Christopher down, but it turned out to be a dead end. He was nowhere near Saskatchewan when Michaela disappeared. He even issued a statement that reads, quote, "All I can provide for you is that she suffered from self-harm a few years back. Back then, I was helping those who struggled, and I encouraged her to fight against self-harm and look towards God." It sounds like he was maybe from a church or something, and I don't know. That's his story, trying to help troubled youth.
Unless I heard more about him, I wouldn't clear him so quickly, but I guess they probably did look over that quite a bit.
I'd like to, I'd like to believe that the police vetted him.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, he's off the radar for sure.
The only bad thing is you couldn't verify if he was or was not talking to her via all those apps, because those apps are made for privacy.
Yes, they are. Well, not long after Michaela's disappearance, a man named Rick Breit came forward. And he said, "Hey, everybody, guess what? Look at me. I'm Michaela's dad."
Okay.
Bombshell. Everyone's like, "What?" Because he was never in the picture at all.
Wait, the sound effect from Home Improvement?
Yeah. Everyone turned into Tim Allen.
Remember that? Where it's on the
theme
song.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you know that. Yeah. I didn't.
I mean, it sounded just like it. Later on, I want to compare it. I wanted
too.
To compare it and see how close it was.
Yeah, Sam can grab it and then put it right next to Tim Allen.
I bet it's so close.
I hear the theme song now.
Dun, 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 dun.
Quiet your mind.
Okay, so we stopped for a minute. Sam got it all mixed up for us so we can compare this thing.
All right. And I haven't heard it yet.
Joe hasn't heard it.
I left the room to pee and I have not heard the comparison.
So here's Joe.
What?
And now here's the theme song.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Joe, did you get some voiceover work for that show?
Hold on. Hold on. Let me try and I'm going to put them together. Hold on just a second.
Oh, my God.
That's crazy.
That's Tim Allen in one side and me in the other.
Yes.
And it fit perfect without retiming or anything.
Yes. Oh my God.
All I did was match them up. I did nothing else.
Yeah, I watched you do it.
They were perfectly timed.
What's so funny?
Already.
Another thing that's funny about that is when we stopped and Sam was moving it around, Sam said that he thought of it too, right as I thought of it, right after you did it.
You're going to have to eventually do it to where at the end of that, it's just me and not Tim.
Well, here, hold on.
Okay. Oh, my God.
No, every time I watch Home Improvement, you earned it, Joe. I'll think of you every time.
That's so weird. I love it.
You Hold and on, Tim I want to do one more thing.
And that's with reverb. We stopped for a second to add some reverb.
Oh, my. It's so spot on.
Dang, Joe.
That's wow. All right. I love it.
I don't know what we'll use that for, but we got to save it and use it. I don't know what for.
It's just so weird that it was just a part of me reading and being stupid like I am. And it just happened to perfectly. I couldn't do it again that good if I tried. If someone was like, "Hey, do the end of the Home Improvement theme song." I couldn't do it.
To be put on the spot, it'd be tough.
Yeah.
But that was perfect.
Thanks, Magic Sam, for those editing skills.
See, here's what I want to know about brains. I wonder if you did that because of that show.
Yeah.
I wonder if that was like a memory that you subconsciously pulled that audio file.
Dude, I've
played it.
I've binged that show hard in the past. Yeah. So it's just stuck in the old brain meats.
Do the Roseanne laugh at the very end of the Roseanne.
Oh, I can't do that.
Well, you will one of these days, and we'll find it and we'll stop and we'll do the same thing. Cause I bet you will.
Oh, I probably have came close.
You probably have all those 80s and 90s TV show samples in your brain.
Oh, I love Roseanne. That's a show I can just put on and I can just rewatch and rewatch. So yeah, to backtrack from that several minute long detour, this guy named Rick Breit, as I was saying, here we go back again. He came forward saying, hey, I'm Michaela's dad.
Okay.
My first question would have been like, well, where were you? While she was like, oh, I don't know, around.
Yeah.
Now you're showing up?
Yeah.
Where were you? Where were you? She needed like, oh, a dad?
Yeah. Okay. Great question. Yeah.
After Michaela's friend said that she had expressed a desire to meet her dad, police investigated Rick to see maybe if he had anything to do with the disappearance. He was eventually cleared. And although Michaela's mother denies that he is the father, he has since mounted a campaign claiming to be her father and has made his own efforts to assist in her search.
Okay.
I think I saw, maybe it was on Facebook. He has a whole page dedicated to it. And it's just him saying like, help me find my daughter.
But why didn't they officially find that out? I mean, that's an easy thing.
I know with DNA.
I mean, I'm sure maybe the police do know.
They may. Well, this guy sure convinced he's the father.
Maybe it's just like, we know, but I mean, why would we go public with that? You know,
where's Maury Povich?
That's true. You are the father.
Michaela's case was initially handled by the Yorkton RCMP. That's the Royal Canadian Mounted Police.
Okay.
But they quickly turned it over to the GIS, which is the General Investigators Unit. This is sort of like Canada's version of the FBI.
Okay.
More than a year later, they conducted a 3-day grid search in the woods around Sacred Heart High School, but nothing was found. They also searched all of her social media accounts and phone records, but as far as I could find, this produced no solid leads. Hundreds of tips have poured in, as well as many supposed sightings. The first was in Vancouver, over 1,000 miles to the west. Then a sighting was reported at the Grey Eagle Casino in Calgary, which is about 500 miles from Yorkton. However, casinos tend to have top-notch surveillance, and no footage of Michaela was found from there. So I highly doubt she was ever there.
Sure. Yeah, and I think they actually have good cameras.
I'm sure they do, man. Yeah. Trying to catch, you know, people cheating and whatnot.
Card counting.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sneaking in outside drinks.
Yeah. You got to look for any Rain Man type characters coming in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you know math, you're not allowed. But high-level math anyway.
Subsequent sightings have been reported all across Canada, but none have ever been verified as Michaela.
Canada's a big place.
It is a very big place. I think it has about the same square miles as America, but like a tenth of the people.
Mm.
Like there's hardly anybody up there.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds great.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
Might get a jacket.
True. Michaela's family has fought to keep her name in the news and her search ongoing. Through fundraising events, they've raised a $25,000 reward for any information leading to her safe return. In 2017, the National Center of Missing and Exploited Children also joined the search effort. And in December of 2018, an anonymous donor helped to double the reward to a total of $50,000. Isn't that awesome?
Mm-hmm.
But in the... no, I'm going somewhere with that.
I thought you were being sarcastic.
No.
Like it should be more or something.
No, 50 grand. The guy was like, hey, I'm doubling that. I'll give you another 50, 25.
The way you ended that, it was kind of, it's like, wait, what?
Well, what I'm trying to lead to is the dude retracted the $25,000 less than a year later. He needed his money back.
Okay, well.
Off that reward. He's like, on second thought.
I get it. I mean, it's money he needed, I guess.
Yeah. I've just, in all the years and all the episodes, I've never seen it. That's the first time I've ever seen where someone was like, oh, we need to take that reward back because,
yeah,
I don't know, property taxes were more than we thought this year.
Yeah, something.
Got a divorce and my wife cleaned me out.
Yeah, could have been anything. Yeah.
Thankfully, since then, additional fundraising efforts have raised the total reward to $100,000.
Oh, that's something to sneeze at for sure.
Now, theories.
Yeah, I'd like to hear these.
Let's do these.
All right.
Number one, Michaela ran away. She left her acne meds at home, never accessed any of her money in the bank. Nothing else shows any activity. That's the first theory. She did all this to simply run away.
Seems pretty plausible.
I mean, yeah, maybe, but she was running away to meet somebody. I mean,
still running away.
So that's all I'm saying. I'll accept that theory as long as with it is that someone else was involved.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think in a lot of cases, that's probably the case, you know?
Sure. Yeah.
A lot of runaways, you probably have helps in some way.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
especially when you're that age. How old was she?
16, I believe.
Yeah, so, I mean, she's smart enough to, she has a contact that can help her.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
If you don't have a car or don't have money, which it doesn't seem like she did.
No. Sure.
No, she didn't.
Then you have somebody else that you know that can get you where you want to go.
Yeah, for sure. Because, you have to have hope.
She was on the phone with somebody.
And it's just like how nefarious this person was. That's the thing.
Right. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
Second theory is the one I think it's safe to say that we all agree on. She met up with an online predator.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He had an active... had an active online presence. She used anonymous apps like Snapchat and Kick, and she seemed to be trying to meet up with someone on the day of her disappearance and seemed to be trying to do it everything like under the radar.
Yeah, especially if you say that Kick is how it is or was
that's
how
what
it was. You
it
know?
Was described as, yeah.
Yeah, I've heard of it before. That's what it is. I mean, it's used that way and then, you know, adultery as well, mm-hmm. stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that second one. Kidnapped. Maybe she was initially trying to run away, but there's a single girl, you know, out by herself wandering around town. Maybe the first plan was interrupted by kidnapping.
True.
Or, you know, some predator snatched her up.
Could have been.
Yeah, it just don't like the probability of that. I think that, you know, the odds are pretty low. That,
I would agree.
Because it's already kind of a random thing that's happening, and then another random thing comes along.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I didn't even think of this, but, you know, she approaches that random lady in the Tim Hortons and asks about a hotel room. What if somewhere along the way that day, you know, after she had dropped off the radar, she's either on the phone or let's pretend like a guy overhears her.
Yeah.
Or she approaches a guy that to her looks friendly or innocent enough. And, oh, I can help you, hun. And, you know, what if he sees it as an opportunity? I still don't think that's what happened. I think this was all like,
exactly.
You know, I think she was on the phone with somebody that she'd probably been in contact with for weeks or months. And this had built up.
Sure.
You know, to this and hey, let's meet and all this.
Yeah. And he didn't want to come anywhere closer and be on camera because of two things. One, he had nefarious plans. And two, it's the to catch a predator stuff. So it's both of those things. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So maybe it was a case like, oh, look, I've got Robert Pattinson hair. Look at that hair on that kid. You know, and what if in reality it's some guy in his mom's basement who looks like me, you know? So now it comes time to, he's actually got to go meet this girl. So he's like, oh, what do I do? You know, I don't know. I'm just throwing out.
Have you ever been on that website, thispersondoesntexist.com?
No.
They're all AI generated people and they look real, but they don't really exist. So like anyone could like do that, randomize and download and say, hey, this is me.
So you don't even have to use a stock photo. You can create one.
The disadvantage of the stock photo is you can always reverse image search it and it'll come up and they'll say, oh yeah, this is, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But in this other case, it doesn't. So yeah, it could have been one of those types of things or any kind of generator, not just that one. But I'm sure now because AI, you could probably tell AI to do whatever and it'll create a picture.
Oh yeah, of course.
Create a picture of a, you know, 18-year-old man with Patrick, what'd you say his name? Oh, the guy.
Robert Pattinson.
I almost said Patrick Swayze.
Hey, that too, baby.
Yeah, but it wouldn't work now so much. But
no. Yeah, my wife was just watching Dirty Dancing yesterday.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah. It would still work now.
Oh, it might. It might.
He's dreamy.
Yeah.
He'd still be dreamy.
Hey, don't put baby in a corner.
That's right.
Or don't let her get a nose job. That's a whole other story. So we can are we all on the same boat here with... And it's pretty obvious, like, right, we're not cracking some code. I think most people believe that she was trying to meet up with somebody.
I mean, it's plausible that she was trying to meet up with somebody and somebody else. I mean, not plausible, but plausible-ish.
Yeah.
She asked the wrong person for help.
But what if, like, so 1 to 145, leaving the bus depot is the last time she's seen, what if... In the bus depot, you know, she had finally, the guy had finally said, okay, I'm going to pick you up outside the bus depot.
Yeah.
So she sees him, she gets in the car, and then obviously he, you know, had bad intentions because no one knows where she is. I mean, there's another possibility that she successfully pulled whatever off that she was trying to pull off, and she is intentionally remaining missing. That's a possibility, I guess.
Yeah. I don't think that's likely, but it is a possibility.
Yeah, I don't either. Well, at the time of her disappearance, Michaela Bali was 5'2" and weighed 112 pounds. She had ash blonde hair and blue eyes. She was wearing blue jeans, a burgundy jacket, a teal infinity scarf, burgundy suede boots, and a ruby gemstone ring. Her hair was long and curly, and she was wearing dark rimmed glasses. She was also carrying a dark blue plaid backpack. If anyone out there has any information regarding Michaela's whereabouts or who may have taken her, call the Saskatchewan RCMP at 306-641-9436. As we said earlier, there is currently a $100,000 reward, but if you know anything about her disappearance or where she is, just, you know, be a good human and help out.
This one seems solvable. Some of these don't. This one does. And I don't know what the break is. I don't know what it is. But
well, the one no one wants to think about is her body's found.
Yeah, for
sure.
That's
the one.
Yeah.
But yes, there's other... You're talking about maybe... Do you think it's solvable with a positive outcome?
No. Closure is a positive-ish outcome, yes, other than the never knowing. You know, I always hated those Unsolved Mysteries episodes where, you know, the mom or the dad does all this stuff to try to find their kid and they end up dying and it's solved later. That's kind of rough.
Yeah.
Well, the fact they end up dying and then they go to their grave and they have to, you know, man, I don't know.
Go to their grave without knowing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I mean, that instance has happened in my own family.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
A missing person in my own family and his parents are both passed now and they died not knowing what happened to him. So yeah, that was the case of Michaela Bali. Anyone who has any ideas or theories, you know, 4174-MANIS, throw them at us.
Hey, who's crowdsourced this thing? I mean, everyone, and I want to go on and I want to watch those videos up close, like maybe cast it to my big TV, because I know of a case that was solved because of that. Just a lot of people looking and some people noticed something that the other people didn't see.
Okay.
So it's like everyone look at it and maybe you'll say, hey, what about that guy? You know, you could be that person.
Yeah.
It's like, that guy's in this video and he looks weird. Or what about this detail or whatever? It could be anything.
Yep. I agreed. Yeah. So that's it. Michaela Bali. Thank you again, everyone. The pod. That's what you are now. Thanks to the pod out there for listening to us.
That's right. Not Tide Pods.
Oh, you just ruined it.
No.
So yeah, thank y'all for listening and we will catch you on the next one.
Let me tell you about some fellas I know named Ivan, Sam, and Joe. They got themselves a little podcast, you know. And they talk about everything under the sun that they find interesting, spooky, or fun. And they sure ain't trying to impress no one. The remedy to too much time on your hands is take a little listen to the dawn of Manti. They talk about killers, monsters, and cults, French maids from hell, disappeared folks. Occasionally throw in a few dad jokes. They try to make every story extra nice by adding their own ginger spice. Not one time or two, but thrice. The remedy to too much time on your hands is take a little listen to the dawn of Manti. Now I'm sure these fellas will be around for quite a spell, 'cause there sure ain't no shortage of stories to tell. This old world's as weird as hell. But hell, even if nobody listened, you know they'd maintain a fine disposition, 'cause shooting the breeze is kind of their mission. The remedy to too much time on your hands is take a little listen to the dawn of Manti. Too much time on your hands is take a little listen to